Good afternoon and welcome on in to Tuesday's Kildare Focus. It's the 17th of October. You're listening to KFM and it's Caoimhe Hearney here with you until 3. Coming up first on today's show, we'll speak to Jackie Smith, Tusla National Lead for Foster Care, because it's National Fostering Week. At 2:20, Sheena Mitchell, pharmacist and founder of wondercare.ie, will be telling us about multivitamins, what you need and what you should be taking. We'll hear from the area manager for the Carlow Centre of the Irish Blood Transfusion Service, because there is a blood donation clinic taking place in Athy today. And then lastly, we'll hear from Dan Colley, director and writer for theatre and film and theatre artist in residence at the Riverbank Arts Centre in Newbridge. If you want to get in touch with the show, you can text in 045 898 999. You can email me to studio@kfmradio.com, or of course you can send us in a text or WhatsApp.
Kildare Focus with Caoimhe Hearney. Text or WhatsApp 0833 97 97 97.
Now, this week is National Fostering Week, and the campaign aims to address a shortage in foster carers across Ireland. Of course, the need for foster parents is at an all-time high due to increased demand of children's needs. Well, I'm joined on the line now by Jackie Smith, Tusla National Lead for Foster Care. Good afternoon, Jackie.
Hi, Caoimhe. Thanks for having me on.
Delighted to have you. Jackie, I'm reading here in the things that I have that it says that Ireland is one of the world leaders in foster care, with almost 4,000 foster carers opening their homes to over 5,000 children. So we're kind of, you know, leading the way in a way.
Oh, absolutely. Ireland has one of the highest percentages of foster care for children in care in the world, at over 90 or in and around 90%.
That's amazing. Is there any reason, do you think, that is, or, you know, why are we so good at it?
I think Irish people are deeply committed to wanting to give children the best possible start. I think that's a huge part of it. You know, Ireland's provision of alternative care has been really, really startling in terms of the commitment of people coming forward to look after these children. I think there's a great sense of community and a great sense of what children need. So I think that's really the prime motivation for most people coming forward to be foster carers.
Okay. Still though, Jackie, all the time, you know, you have children there who need a home. You probably still need more foster carers, even though we are the world leaders. You still need people to come forward.
Oh, absolutely. Because every time a foster home is opened up and a child moves into that house, well then, obviously for a period of time, if not forever, that home will not be able to take another child, depending on what's happening. So every time we get wonderful foster carers coming through the system and children come to live with them, we then need another foster carer to come through to make sure that we have the same amount of availability. And also, children's needs are really different. So different families suit different children. You know, some children will thrive in a really busy house with other kids and lots of activities. Some children will work better in a quieter home. So it's really important that we have a diversity in terms of the types of home and also the types of carers, so the backgrounds of our carers, because the children who need foster homes come from really diverse backgrounds themselves.
Okay, yeah, and I'm sure, like, the different types of homes, like you said, you know, some children might want to live in a city and others might be better in a rural setting, so you really do need that mixture of homes there.
Oh yeah, and it's really important. So it's really the focus on community. And you know, a child who has to come into care, that's a really difficult experience. But if that child can continue on in like the same school, that they have the same teacher, or they can go to their football club, you know, if they can stay in an environment in their own community, well, that's a real buffer against the adversity that they're going through. And the familiarity, as you say, of like, if you're a child from a rural background, being able to stay in a rural locality, and likewise if you're from an urban background or a city, you know, to have to move to brand new locations, very frightening. So having people available in the communities that those children come from is exceptionally important where it can happen. You know, that really can provide so much positivity to a child who's going through a really difficult time.
Okay. You spoke there about, you know, the different types of foster carers. And, you know, you can be a foster carer, I think, you know, for maybe a short amount of time. Some people, of course, we know, you know, take children until, well, even past their 18 and that kind of bond is formed. You know, for people who might feel like, well, I couldn't do this for a long term, you know, or maybe years, are there options there for people?
Oh, there really are. And there's lots and lots of ways that foster care operates to help children and support families. So as you say, like there's short-term foster care, which could be for a child who maybe their family needs help for a certain period of time. So short-term foster care could be for a number of weeks. It could be for a number of months, and the child might then be able to return to their family. So there can be a really supportive kind of foster care. There's emergency placements where children come in and maybe we need to do an assessment of their circumstances and they may be able to return home or return to other family members. So that's a shorter term commitment that can suit some people better. There's respite foster care, which again is a lovely type of foster care where you support either a family in the community or a foster family who may just be struggling a little bit, and allowing a child to have, you know, an extra support in their network, much like an extended family member, an aunt or a grandparent would take a child, you know, and be that extra support. That's kind of what respite is. And then there's what we traditionally associate, which is the longer term foster care, where a child might come and live with you right through their childhood and beyond into their adulthood and become like a member of your family, you know, in this longer term way. So absolutely, there are, and I know people personally who've done respite for 10 and 15 years, and that's worked really well for them and their family and the children that they look after. So there's many, many types that can work around people's commitments, their lifestyles and their capabilities.
Okay, so there's options there for everyone. Probably people listening in, Jackie, right now thinking, God, I'd love to do that, but they don't know how to go about it. Like, what steps do you take if you're fresh to the foster caring, you know, arena? Like, where do you go first step?
I think the very first step to do is to make contact with us so that you can get more information about what's involved. And the easiest ways to do that are to go on to fostering.ie, which is our TUSLA website, which is full of information, videos, but also has links to information events which are running over the next few weeks. And we actually run online information sessions every month throughout the year for anybody who's interested in becoming a foster carer. We also have a free phone line, which is 1800 226 771. And if you ring that line, one of our team will take your details and a social worker will phone you back within about 3 days, and they can go through with you your own personal circumstances, because often people will have a question. You know, I work certain hours, or I have a dog, or, you know, I'm not married. Are these things going to rule me out? And what often happens is we find out, no, those things don't rule you out. It's really about what type of fostering, the age group of the child, what is going to work best? Because ultimately what fostering is about is foster children. So it's about matching what you can do and the needs of the children that are out there. So I would advise people to ring our free phone number, which is 1800 226 771, or check out fostering.ie.
Okay, I have a text in here to 0833 97 97 97. Guiva, can you ask Jackie, do you have to have children to be a foster carer?
No, you don't.
Okay.
As I was saying there, you know, different types of homes work for different children. So sometimes a busy home with lots of children is an excellent place for a child, and that's really what they need. And sometimes from raising children, we'll have certain knowledge and experience, and we'll be able to bring something into our fostering that's really, really useful. But that said, you know, when you start out as a parent or foster parent, you're starting out as a new experience. And it is absolutely fine to start out fostering when you haven't had children, because it gives you other things. So you may have additional time on your hands. You may have additional skills that you're bringing from your own life or from your work. So there's lots of things that people bring to the table in fostering that are about much more than just parenting experience. And we have loads of foster carers out there who didn't parent biological children before they became foster parents, and they are wonderful foster carers. Mm. So absolutely not, it doesn't fill you out.
In terms of the age of children then, I assume, Jackie, you know, maybe people might feel more comfortable with an older child, some people, and then maybe there's people who are great with toddlers and young babies. Again, can you say, you know, can you put a preference in terms of like what you would feel comfortable with?
Yeah, certainly. So a lot of people will come forward at the very initial stages and they'll have an idea in their head of what they think will suit their family and what they think that they will be able to manage best. And part of our process as we explore what's going to work is looking at, is that the case? Does that make sense? And have we considered all the possibilities? Because certainly, you know, some people will come in and they'll think, well, I'd love to foster a baby, but maybe their lifestyle doesn't really support that. And maybe actually when they sit down and think of that, they have certain skills and certain things that would work really well with a different age group of children. And it's also breaking down, I suppose, what our ideas are about different age groups and figuring out what the needs of different age groups are. So absolutely you can come in with a preference, but part of our job then as social workers is to really explore that and make sure that that is right for you, your family, and also the foster child, because the foster placement has to be able to meet the needs of the particular child, given their age and their developmental stage and, you know, their own needs as well. Mm. So we do a good bit of work on that.
Okay. What do you think makes someone a good foster carer?
Oh, there's so many different things, because foster carers bring so many different things to the table. Like, you could never say this is what the ideal foster carer looks like, because it's so varied and different, just like our foster children. But I think being open-minded, non-judgmental, flexible, being able to kind of move with a changing environment is really good. You know, and really having a deep love of children. Mm. I think that, you know, that's at the core. There's lots of skills and things we'll teach you and we'll train you and we'll work with you on. But those type of things, that openness for the child, for their own family, and flexibility, you know, those are probably some of the real core skills. And just the love of kids.
Okay. Okay. I'm just going to give out that free phone number again there for anyone who may want to call. It's 1-800-226-771. That's 1-800-226-771. And also you can find more information, as Jackie said, on fostering.ie. Lots of videos and different links there, Jackie, isn't there, for people to learn more about fostering?
There is, and you get to hear the voices of our two foster carers and get a sense of what their experience has been. So it's a lovely site. There's loads of information there for people.
Okay, Jackie Smith, Tusla National Lead for Foster Care, marking National Fostering Week here on KFM. Thanks very much, Jackie, for joining us this afternoon. Now, a new artificial intelligence-operated shop has opened at Dublin Airport. The Dublin Town to Go outlet, located in Terminal 1, arrivals will sell everything from coffee, pastries, cereal and toiletries. Shoppers can gain entry by scanning their payment card on the way into the shop. Customers are charged for products through camera technology and weight sensor-enabled shelving, which I can't believe this, which detects what each person is buying. So there you go. If you want to be served by a robot, Terminal 1 arrivals is where you can do it there in Dublin Airport. I have to say, I don't really like that. And I don't really like the self-service checkouts either. Do you know, I don't know, maybe it's just because I'm a talker and I like to talk to people. But even when you go through the self-service in any of the kind of, you know, the shops that have it, like if you're buying like a bottle of wine or something that's like, you know, you have to get approval for, you have to stand there and wait, and you know, then they've to come over and whenever check ID. Well, used to check my ID, not anymore. But yeah, I just think there's something nice about having that personal touch. But let me know what you think about that anyway. Gary Neville is going on the next series of Dragon's Den as one of the show's first guest investors. But the former footballer says fans will have to wait and see if he decides to put any money up. Since retiring from Manchester United, he has built a portfolio of business interests, including a hotel and other property developments. So there you go, Gary Neville will be on the new season of Dragon's Den. 0833 97 97 97. Keep your messages coming in, and we'll be speaking to Sheena Mitchell after the break about multivitamins and do you need them? What should you be taking? Don't go away.
Kildare Focus with Caoimhe Harney. Text or WhatsApp 0833 97 97 97.
Now, we're constantly being bombarded with marketing from multivitamin companies, but do we need them all? Well, I'm joined on the line now by Sheena Mitchell, pharmacist and founder of wondercare.ie. Good afternoon, Sheena.
Good afternoon, Caoimhe.
Sheena, sometimes, you know, in work here in the office, and, you know, me and the girls are talking, we're saying, oh God, I feel very tired and I'm taking whatever, like, you know, zinc, and someone else is taking something else, and we all seem to be taking everything. And yes, we're all always tired. So I don't know, do they actually work?
Yeah, so it is, you're absolutely right. It's mind-boggling and sometimes overwhelming and confusing because you're trying to do the right thing. And there is definitely a place for multivitamins. But I suppose the thing to remember is that all of your vitamins and minerals are available through a balanced, healthy diet. So it comes down to the fact that, unfortunately, there are many groups who aren't able to have a full, balanced, healthy diet. Like even, you know, young kids will go through phases of not eating particular foods. The elderly sometimes don't have a great appetite, and, you know, the demands for their, say, vitamin D levels, etc., increase. And then you've got people like vegans or people doing a lot of sport or people with malabsorption issues who all have different requirements. So it's very important to have a tailored approach to, I suppose, considering whether or not you need a multivitamin.
Okay, so let's just take a person, for example, who doesn't have any health problems, or, you know, isn't a celiac, or, you know, they don't suffer from anything that would, I suppose, stop them from absorbing vitamins from food or whatever.
Yeah.
Technically speaking, if they eat correctly and have a balanced diet, they should be able to get everything they need from their food.
There is one exception, and that's vitamin D.
Okay.
So vitamin D, because it is only produced by the body in response to exposure to sunlight. And in Ireland, because of our latitude and also our poor weather, even in the summer, we wouldn't actually be able to absorb enough sunlight. And obviously there's hazards associated with UVA and UVB rays as well. So that's one that the HSE do recommend to supplement with. Now, you can take it on its own, but I would imagine that particular group that you're talking about are quite rare and few and far between on a regular basis. You know, it's hard to eat a rainbow every single day. So sometimes the vitamin D can be in with, you know, another relatively cheap multivitamin once you make sure your vitamin D level is adequate for the age group. So, for example, all adults really would be taking 15 micrograms, and then you've got the younger groups, kind of under 4 would be 5 micrograms, and 5 to 11 would be 10 micrograms. So the vitamin D is essential, and the other group would be women of a childbearing age. All of those should be on folic acid, 400 micrograms. So they're two that are kind of the exception, really, to, you know, a healthy, balanced diet.
Okay, well, it's interesting that you say that, because the last time, the last time and the first time that I got my bloods done, I was deficient in vitamin D. So now I'm on vitamin D, and I'm grand. I actually feel a lot more energetic since I'm taking that. But the folic acid, Sheena, like, I know you're saying women of childbearing age, but is that even if they don't plan on, you know, getting pregnant or having a child anytime soon, would you still recommend that they be on it, irregardless of that?
Yeah, because basically it takes a long time, you know, for folic acid to reach, I suppose, appropriate levels. And the recommendation is just really out of, I suppose, a world of caution just to take it all the time. Folic acid is one of the ones that kind of, you know, it's important in nerve health and red cell production anyway, so it's probably no harm. And when you're talking about women in particular, even if they're going through kind of their normal menstrual cycle, if they're, you know, not thinking about conceiving, there is obviously a role for that to play in, you know, your red blood cells and also your iron levels as well. So it's no harm to be on it in addition.
Okay, so folic acid and vitamin D, they're the two ones that really you kind of need to be on, you know, and you can't get from a balanced diet. If we look at people then maybe who are deficient in other things, like, what is the best multivitamin to go on? Because as we know, there's so many different ones out there.
Yeah, exactly. And what I would say is I produce this chart because people, I suppose, you know, like to be able to pick their own particular brand off a shelf. So I produce a chart which is available to download for free on wondercare.ie. And basically, it will tell you your reference intake value. So these are set out by EU legislation. And this is, I suppose, the amount that you should be getting of each vitamin for optimal health. Now, for people who, like, everyone is different. So if you have, say, for example, the person who does a lot of sport and, you know, are using their muscles a lot and potentially sweating, those people should be replacing all of their water-soluble vitamins, which are essentially all the vitamins other than A, D, E and K. And they should also be taking magnesium to help reduce muscle cramping and things like that. But then if you've got someone who's more concerned about winter health and they want to make sure that their immune system is functioning properly, then you've got vitamins, like some of these are fat soluble, and I'll explain that more in a minute, but vitamin A and E, so they're fat soluble, and vitamin C and zinc and D, again, are all good for your immune health. So when I talk about fat soluble vitamins versus water soluble, basically vitamins A, D, E and K, so I always say, remember ADEC, A, D, E and K are the only vitamins that you can overdose on. And that's because they're stored in the fat in your body rather than in the water. So that's similar to the people there who I was describing. If you're sweating a lot, you'll lose your water soluble vitamins because they leave your body in your sweat. So it's just important to know little nuances like that. Then there's certain other vitamins as well, which would be important to say if you've got an elderly person who's struggling with wound healing or people with diabetes, and it'd be important to include a vitamin K supplement as part of their multivitamin as well, along with A, C and E. So there is a lot of nuances and it is difficult to talk to different about, you know, to make it one answer fits all. But the I suppose the typical person that you were talking about earlier, you know, low in energy and taking a lot of things, what I would say is make sure that you're taking the right amount of B vitamins and also things like magnesium. And just, it's no harm to get your blood checked, you know, for iron levels and all of that as well. But this time of year, I do encourage people to try and get out and exercise a little bit, even if it's just a half hour walk a day, because that can actually, you know, increase your energy levels naturally as well. Mm. And seeing the sun early.
Okay. Can you actually overdose on vitamins? Like, is it bad for you to take too much of a vitamin?
So the fat-soluble ones, yes.
Okay.
Because they're stored in your body, even if you don't need them.
And again, whereas A, D, E and K there.
E and K, yeah. Okay. The water-soluble ones, as is often said, are just expensive urine. So if you don't need them, they will just be excretas.
Okay.
So, you know, so you often see people going mad on the vitamin C at this time of year. They're like, oh, no, I won't get a cold. And it's like, well, actually, you can't use that much vitamin C, so there's no point in taking it, you know. So I suppose keeping it realistic. One big thing, and when people talk about brands, I suppose I'd urge caution on some brands in that there are some products out there which, if you look at the back, I mean, they have the whole alphabet on them. They look amazing. But when you actually look at the chart of the reference intakes, say, for example, your vitamin D, if you know you need to take 10 micrograms, there might only be 1 or 2 micrograms in the product that's on the shelf. And so while it might have a lot of different ingredients, it doesn't have the right levels of vitamins in it. So that's something to be really cautious about. And I often get sent in pictures of vitamins from various supermarkets or whatever. And you're like, well, realistically, like, they have everything written on the back, but you'd nearly need to take a supplement along with your supplement. Right. That kind of
okay.
way.
It's funny that you say expensive urine. Is it normal? Because again, and I'm speaking personally and in terms of people within the office and my wider group.
I know what you're going to ask.
Is it normal that vitamins will change the colour of your urine?
Yes, okay. Yes. So many people get really concerned that they're having a urinary tract infection or something. So particularly the B vitamins, they can make us really yellow. Yeah. And actually, it's the same. Like, I know in the pharmacy, we have that where people come in after starting on a particular antibiotic and, you know, it can, you know, discolour your urine, and people can be really concerned. So that is important, because normally when we're watching out for like signs of dehydration, you know, and you're telling people, you know, ideally your urine should be kind of a clear, pale colour.
Yeah.
But when you're taking B vitamins, you have no hope of achieving that.
Yeah.
So not to be alarmed.
Okay, so that's normal then. That's good for people to know out there. Other vitamins then that people should look out for, zinc and magnesium, what would they be good for?
So zinc has an important role to play in the immune system and helps with the absorption of vitamin C. And magnesium is really good just for kind of replenishing. You use up magnesium when you're, I suppose, repairing your muscles after you've done exercise. And so it's important to replenish that. There's other things as well, like chromium. That's been shown to have a role in the regulation of blood sugars. And people will find that sometimes they don't have as many kind of sweet cravings, and they're craving more healthy food if they keep their chromium levels under control.
Can you buy that as a singular tablet?
You can, yeah.
Okay,
you can.
I don't think I've ever seen it before. Okay.
Yeah, you'll find that in the pharmacy. There are some brands that do it just on its own. Most of these are available just on its own, but a lot of them, like, there's basically the 16 kind of main essential vitamins and minerals, and chromium is one of those that are, you know, I suppose, legislated for within the EU. If you get a good multivitamin, the right levels of nearly all of those will be in them. So again, that's on the chart. Like, generally it's around 40 micrograms of chromium will do the job. And another important thing, just a little note for people, if you're trying to get all of your vitamins from your diet and you think you have a great diet and you're cooking loads of veg, and obviously that's very good, but how you cook your vegetables is actually really important. Mm. So, you know, to make sure that you wash your veg, you know, before, or you chop your veg after you wash it, not before, and not to overcook it, and use as little water as possible, steaming where you can, because some of the water soluble vitamins will be lost to the cooking process. And so I'd even say to people, you could use that vegetable water to make soup, you know, or something like that, rather than lose all the vitamin content. So it's just to be aware of that.
Okay, I have one message in here before I let you go, Sheena. This woman says, hi, can you help with menopause? I'm 10 years in with no HRT, but in the past year I have zero energy. What vitamins could help, please?
Okay, so for energy, you're looking at your B vitamins, really. But the other thing, like, menopause and perimenopause are a difficult time, because it's not always a deficiency necessarily in a vitamin level. It's just the hormonal changes. And it sounds to me like that person might want to avoid HRT, and that's absolutely fine. But HRT is a great solution, unfortunately, for even simple things like energy that can, you know, be accompanied with the menopause. But it would certainly be worth trying the B vitamins for energy. They're probably, you know, some of the best ones, because they help us to store our energy and also to release it. Another one which sometimes is helpful is coenzyme Q10. So it's not on my charts because it's not an essential vitamin. But coenzyme Q10 is produced by your liver to release energy, basically, in the metabolism process. And coenzyme Q10 is depleted in people who take statins. So if they're on medicines for high cholesterol, and often they'll find they get, you know, a bit more tired or fatigued. And so supplementing with coenzyme Q10 can be helpful, you know, for a bit of a burst of energy, but it would be the higher dose that you would need, and it is more expensive than some of the staple vitamins.
Okay, Sheena Mitchell, pharmacist and founder of wondercare.ie. And if you want to head on over to wondercare.ie, Sheena has a list made out of the different vitamins and the different micrograms that you may need depending on your age and size, etc. So thanks again, Sheena Mitchell, pharmacist and co-founder of Wondercare. Now, did you know that 1 in 4 of us will need a blood transfusion in our lifetime, and one blood donation can save 3 lives? Well, I'm joined on the line now by Barbara Phelan. She's area manager for the Carlo Centre of the Irish Blood Transfusion Service. Good afternoon, Barbara.
Good afternoon, Cleaver. How are you?
Very good, Barbara. I know that there is a blood donation clinic taking place in Kildare today. Tell us about it.
So we're in Athy today in the Church of Ireland Hall there. The clinic is on from 4:15 until 8:00. And we would ask anyone that's in the local area if they could pop in and attend. That would be fantastic.
Okay. Can people just turn up to the Church of Ireland centre, or do they have to call in advance to book an appointment?
The preference is for an appointment, just for your own sake, so that you don't end up spending any extra time waiting. But if phoning doesn't suit, you are more than welcome to come down. And if we can accommodate you at all, we certainly will.
Okay, so I'll just give out that number there. And again, the time, 4:15 today until 8:00. And it's in the Church of Ireland in Athy. And if you want to call in and make an appointment, 1-800-222-111. That's 1-800-222-111. But as Barbara was saying there, if you can't call, you can chance it maybe and see if you can get an appointment when you just show up at the centre. Is it? Has it been busy yesterday? I know you were operating there yesterday, Barbara, too.
No, it was a good day, but unfortunately we need every day to be a good day. There's just never enough blood. As you said there, 1 in 4 of us need blood transfusions in the course of our lifetime, but only 3% of the population actually donates.
Okay.
So it's quite low. So, we would encourage anyone who's even remotely thinking about it to come down and give it a go and see how you get on.
Are there specific blood types that you're looking for? What's most in demand?
So any of the negative blood types, particularly O negative and A negative, are quite low at the moment. So if anyone knows they are those blood types, that would be really good.
Okay, and of course, if you've never given blood before, you can head on down and you'll get set up and they'll tell you whether you're suitable to give or not. And of course, maybe people gave blood years ago, Barbara, but they haven't done it in a while and they can probably just go back again and see if they're able to do it.
Absolutely. We would call them lapsed donors and we welcome them back at any time they want to. For people who are considering donating for the first time, there is an eligibility quiz on our own website, giveblood.ie, and that's quite comprehensive, which will give you a fairly good idea of whether or not you would be able to donate.
Okay, so that might save you a bit of time going down to the centre if you do that online first. All right, brilliant. That's Barbara Phelan, our area manager for the Carlow Centre of the Irish Blood Transfusion Service. And again, that blood donation clinic taking place in Athy today from 3:45 until 8 p.m. at the Church of Ireland in Athy. Thanks very much, Barbara.
Kildare Focus with Caoimhe Harney.
Now, we are approaching the spooky season and a clown that has been stalking the streets of a Scottish village has been playing games with the residents. So the masked character wearing a Pennywise-style outfit left boxed clues around Skelmorley on Friday the 13th and challenged the villagers to solve the riddle. The locals teamed up to find all the red boxes, which eventually led them to North Ayrshire Village's community garden. A small black cash box awaited their discovery, but instead of treasure inside, the villagers were greeted with their own reflection via a mirror that had the word clown written on it. Speaking to Sky News, the Skelmorley clown rhymed, "Hello again, Jen, that's correct. Yes, they solved my riddle with just 10 hours left. The clue led them on to a popular place, the heart of the village where I can hide in the day. They then had to hunt for a thing with a lock. After a third hunting party, they found a black box. After all their hard work, they opened it up and gasped to be met with their own face staring back." And I'm looking at a picture of the clown here. He's fairly scary. He's in the dark and he's holding a balloon. The weird hair as well, white face. Don't think I'd like to meet him on a dark country road. Of course, the fear of clowns is called coulrophobia. Maybe not, of course, to most people. I've never really heard of that before. But coulrophobia is a fear of clowns. So let me know if you are afraid of clowns. I don't think I'm afraid of clowns, but if I met one in the dark, I think I would be. 0833 97 97 97. Now, Lost Lear is the play that opens in Kildare this week and deals with how we should possibly deal with dementia care here in Ireland. Well, I'm joined on the line now by Dan Colley. He's director and writer for theatre and film and theatre artist in residence at Riverbank Arts Centre in Newbridge. Good afternoon, Dan.
Hi, Cuiva. Thanks for having me on. Even if it was after Olivia Rodrigo. My God, folly that.
I know, it's a great song, isn't it?
It's so good.
Dan, tell us about this play that's opening up and I suppose the idea behind it.
Yeah, it's about a woman called Joy who is, when we meet her, in the middle of what seems to be a rehearsal of King Lear, the famous play by Shakespeare, which is about, as people often know, considered to be a character who has dementia. And she's in the middle of this rehearsal. What becomes gradually clear is that she's actually a much older person, but she sees herself as a younger person because she's being kept in a kind of an old memory by her carers, who do this in order to make her feel empowered and confident and to help care for her. But the problem becomes that when people come in contact with her, they have to find some role in this old memory, lest it sort of take on water or become dislodged. So when her estranged son comes to meet her, he has to find a role within this. And he's not that keen on it. So he... drama ensues, I suppose, as they say.
Okay, probably something that a lot of families would be familiar with, Dan. Like if they've gone through a family member having dementia, where you fit in when perhaps the family member no longer remembers you.
It's true. It's a big conflict in a lot of families, people with memory loss, dementia, and I spoke to a lot of carers about this experience. Family carers, people who've been primary carers of people with dementia and are primary carers of people with dementia, and they all had different sort of ways of going about this problem. Some people were really totally relaxed with the idea of just going with the person's new reality, no matter what it is, even if sometimes it's kind of offensive to you, you know, the idea that sometimes people want to, you know, the person with dementia wants to call you by the name of your sibling, and maybe the sibling isn't the person who's around anymore. Mm-hmm. And so that can be really hard for people. And then others feel the need to really orientate them towards reality to try and make sure that they do their best to keep them in this world with us. And it really is, the truth is that it's different for every family. It's different for every journey that you go on. In the play, we look at one particular form of care which really actively asks the carers to identify a really happy, empowering memory from the past and not try and disabuse the person and say, no, you're actually living in this time now, because that can be very confusing and upsetting. Yet it is sometimes very challenging, as you say yourself, for, you know, if people want to speak to that person as themselves, and what if themselves doesn't really fit into that old memory? What do they do then? And then this method would say, you just have to go with it.
Yeah, Dan, you have first-hand experience of this, don't you?
I do. I've had family members who've lived with dementia, and in fact, how I came across this method was, you know, a relative of mine who was living in a nursing home. I noticed that there was a section of the corridor, one of the corridors that had like three old shop fronts, you know, sort of like a post office from the 1950s and a newsagent's and a tuck shop. And I thought, I wonder what that's about. And it turns out it's part of a whole movement of dementia care design, which intends to make the sort of surrounding experiences of the person with dementia more like a familiar older time. And so this is just three little shop fronts, I suppose. But then you go to America or the Netherlands or even a place in Limerick where there's whole dementia villages where people live in houses that are made to look like, say, clapboard houses with porches on the front and a village square. And it's almost like a kind of a film set of an old past that the people would have lived in. And so it seems like that's sort of a general part of a movement in how to look after people with dementia. Even though not everybody would say that's the best way to do it. There are some that would say, would advocate for, you know, why do we have to build dementia villages that are friendly to people with dementia? Why can't my village be friendly to people with dementia? So there's a bit of a debate around that.
A debate around that. I suppose, you know, you making this play, and it's really going to reach out to a lot of people, and it's going to be quite emotive for people maybe who have experienced this, because it can be a real struggle. But I saw something on Instagram in recent days, and it was very funny. There was an older woman, I think she was 88, but like that, she had dementia, and her granddaughter asked her, "What age are you?" And she said, "I'm 25." And she said, "You're 25? "Yeah, I'm 25. "No, you're not. Do you want me to tell you what age you are?" She said, "Okay." And she said, "Grandma, you're 88. "No, I'm not 88. So, you know, and it's that kind of finding funny moments in hard times, I think, that will really hit home with people and this play.
Absolutely. I think you can't ignore the fact that, you know, a life with dementia is still life with all of its complexities, its joys, and it's a more complicated life. But when you're living with dementia, you're just living with dementia in a way. And so, yeah, we find new ways of connecting with people. And I mean, I've spoken to several people who've found new kind of nuances in their relationships with their parents that, you know, aren't necessarily a bad thing. They're just new kinds of ways of connecting with them. And of course, we definitely have to find the humor. I mean, also, I mean, King Lear is one of the great plays, you know, and we sort of riffed on it, you know. I took some of my favorite scenes from it, and those are the ones that we do, that we sort of focus on in this play. And so what you get, I suppose, in this play is several layers of the story, and how they interact is a bit of a pleasure, you know.
Okay. Lost Lear, then, it opens this Friday. It starts this Friday in the Riverbank Arts Centre. When does it run till?
It runs then until Saturday, and then we're on a national tour after that. But Friday and Saturday in the national, in the Riverbank Arts Centre.
Okay, are there tickets left?
There are some tickets left, but get going, because it was in the Dublin Theatre Festival last year, and people wanted to see it then. So,
okay,
sell. That's what I'm here to say.
Very good. It sounds like our sales team in here. The tickets are available at the Riverbank Arts Centre or online, Dan, are they?
Exactly.
Okay. Dan Colley, director and writer for the theatre and film and theatre artist in residence at the Riverbank Arts Centre in Newbridge. Thanks very much, Dan, for joining us this afternoon.
And best of luck on Friday.
That's all I have time for today. We'll be back at the same time tomorrow.